You're listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast, your weekly podcast looking at all things Warhammer. Hello and welcome to episode 231 of the Sprues and Brews podcast. My name is Dave and I'm joined once again by Matt.
Hello.
Jay.
Hello.
And Andy.
Oh, the lady.
Oh, God. Is that like the seventh time you've said it in this short little bit of recording before we started? Anybody would think you've had some Bretonians arrive today. Well, that's true. That's true. Anybody would have thought you had some Bretonians delivered today, Andy?
Not delivered, just an email.
An email is all you need to show your faith to the lady.
Carrier pigeon from the capital of Bretonnia. Knights on route.
I thought pigeons were an empire thing.
Oh, yeah, they did. The engineers have them, don't they? They strap bombs to them.
Pigeon bombs.
Yeah, in Bretonnia, they look after their pigeons. In the empire, they blow them up.
A law retcon, Jay. Do you know you're mental about that?
Craziest start to an episode ever. So we're back with our latest episode, and it's going to be a good one. For our main segment this week, we're going to be looking at, or Matt specifically, Matt's done all the preparing, for law changes. There's a few things that have happened recently which have kind of given this as a topic, really, because I think it's something that's happened quite a lot during the course of Warhammer history. We're going to be checking that out as part of our main segment. For our top three this week, we're going to be looking at our top three dream made-to-order items. We seem to be getting a lot of made-to-order at the moment. I think almost every pre-order week there's something up for made-to-order. At least that's what it feels like just recently, mainly spurred on by, of course, all the old world stuff. But I think we've got some orcs coming up made-to-order this week.
So there's an old-school orc dreadnought made-to-order. Which is
that's the metal lump of lead.
Yeah.
Oh man, it's probably about the same size as a mega knob now, isn't it?
It is, yeah. But you can kill someone with it if you want to.
Yeah, don't drop it on your foot.
So should make for quite a fun top three, and of course we've got all the usual news bits and bobs in the community top three towards the end. But the first thing that we always open with is a look at our hobby updates, and we've already kind of picked on them already. So Andy, let's hear your hobby updates.
Oh, okay. Where to begin? I've been building some more scenery. I think on the last episode I was talking about building some Middle Earth scenery, specifically, I think it's called the Gondor Tower. So I built that. I've started on the two Gondor mansions. I'm enjoying it, but there's a lot of pieces to those kits.
There are a lot of pieces. I mean, they look phenomenal when they're built, especially if you build it so you can take the lid off it, and it's just a beautiful kit. But geez, you're going to be there for a long time building it.
It's definitely a love-hate relationship, but I'm loving it for the most part. I kind of feel like I want to pick up another one just so I can play around with how I'm building it and make it a bit sort of like ruined and destroyed and stuff like that. But
any temptations to go like triple story?
At the minute, no.
Did you go down the stairs? Was that a fun part of your life?
Yeah, that was fun, but storing a three-story Gondor mansion might be a bit extreme. But to carry on the terrain building, I actually built the entirety of the Star Wars Shatterpoint scenery set from the core set today.
Cool.
Unfortunately, it's been pouring down with rain, otherwise I would have primed it today and jumped into painting it late in the week. But I've got that built, and that was actually very unpainful. Not painful, that's the right word.
The opposite of painful. Fun. I think fun's the opposite of painful.
Let's go with fun. Yeah, it was enjoyable. So I've got the Shatterpoint scenery built. What else have I been building? I've taken a bit of a break from painting. There's loads of stuff and I can't think of anything off the top of my head. Some more Conquest. That's right next to me. So I've been building some city-states. I'm going to butcher the names, but I've been building some of the Hoplites, I think we're called. For Conquest. And I've been building some Bow Chosen as well for the Nords, which are like the Viking faction of the game. So I've been building some of that. And there's probably a ton more that I cannot think of off the top of my head. But yeah, I haven't really been doing any painting. It's just been a lot of building. I'm just waiting for the weather to get better, even though we've had 2 days of sunshine. Today's been terrible. I'm waiting for the weather to get better. But yeah, that's me.
Excellent. Yeah, the weather's been super inconsistent, apart from the last 2 days, which I assume you were stuck in work, Andy, and that's why I couldn't get any priming done. Be typical. Yeah, yeah. 2 days it's sunny, you're stuck in work. It's always the way. Let's pick on Matt next. What have you been up to, Matt?
What have I been up to? That's a very good question. I've been building and painting the contents of the brand new Dark Oath army set, up for pre-order right now. Check out our link on spruesandbrews.com. Yeah, that's an awesome box. So we had a game with these, didn't we, as part of the review, Dave?
We did.
And they're interesting to play, aren't they?
They, for a bunch of barbarians, they've got a heck of a lot of gameplay mechanics to be keeping track of.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't really matter because in a few months the new edition of the game's out anyway.
Well,
but
true.
Yeah, it's they're really nice. Essentially, they kind of replace a lot of the old Marauder stuff for the Slaves to Darkness, which no doubt is probably going to go to the old folks' home. That is the old world for elderly kits that are getting on a bit. So like the horses do what you'd expect them to do. They're quite annoying. The -1 to hit when you shoot them. You can only unleash hell on them on sixes, and they're really quick. And the dudes, like the infantry, are quite annoying because if you kill one on a 5+, they do a mortal wound back to you. But the chieftain and the fiend monster thing, the wilder beast, as I kept calling it in the review, the wilder fiend. Correction, it's not a wilder beast. That's something completely different. But they were really cool as well. More the wilder fiend, I kind of expected it more to be a combat powerhouse. It was more of a supporting unit, really, dishing out strikes first, which is your favourite mechanic in the entire game, Dave.
So you're alluding to the fact, Matt, that we had a bit of a practice game to help you with the review. So it meant I could dust off some Skaven, obviously preparing for what's on the horizon. And it also obviously allowed you to try out the Dark Oath, because it's always nice to give them a game. It helps flesh out the review a bit, doesn't it? And you're right, the Wilder Fiend, I mean, maybe you charged the wrong kind of unit, but his supporting actions, his supporting buffs seem to be his key element rather than, he just ended up getting bogged down in combat with a bunch of clan.
Yeah, I mean, he's good in combat. He can smash face, but I think, handing out strikes first to things and turning off command abilities and healing himself up, and then when he dies, bursting out of the chest of another Dark Oath hero, he's pretty tasty.
So, this whole strike first thing. So, you've got there's a lot of stuff in the Dark Oath that gives them strikes first, which is fine. Well, it's not fine. So what annoyed me is Age of Sigmar is supposed to be this pinnacle of your opponent being able to do stuff in your turn. And obviously that's what the new edition is hoping to continue upon that trend. What I found was Matt had so many ways to give fights first to his stuff
and a couple of ways
strikes last to my stuff that we lost that reaction element because I was just fighting last. Poor Thankful and Bone Ripper. I don't think they got to fight first at all ever because they were constantly being either, like you say, debuffed or fighting against stuff that was fighting first. So that I thought that was a bit too much. I mean, as a Dark Oath player, that's great, but it was a bit for me, but the army looked great. And I think once you've got those fully painted as well, Matt, it's going to look even better and added in some other other units and stuff that that blend well with the army.
Individually, they're weak. But the problem is, if you're fighting a load of them and I've got a load of strikes first, I kind of... I don't have the downside of you attacking me piecemeal because all my stuff gets to fight before you anyway. But I think maybe if you picked at just pockets of it and start chewing away at it. But again, you know, I could bring back half a unit as for a command point. There's a lot to chew through if you're doing it like kind of bit by bit.
Yeah, well, your chieftain was perfectly set up for that. So he was it in a, was it his ability on his war scroll, or did you give him a warlord trait or something?
Yeah, so his just ability, pure ability in his war scroll, he can do two heroic actions. And the Ravager subfaction for the Slaves of Darkness, which is like the Dark Oath favoured one, for a command point, you can bring back a slain unit at half strength. Brilliant. Now, obviously, in a normal game, you're using that heroic ability instead of Finest Hour or, you know, something like that, aren't you? So there's a downside to it, but for him it's a no-brainer. You just do that every turn and you can still do what heroic action you were going to do anyway. Now we sometimes get this a little bit, don't we, at the end of the edition things get a little bit silly, so I'm hoping that, you know, we've had a cool game with them. I managed to paint up the models and then we'll go into fourth edition and they'll be a little bit more sensible maybe.
Yeah, yeah, they weren't. They weren't bad. It was a close game. It's not like you ran away with the game.
No, but from a gameplay experience, like you say, every combat phase, I pretty much got to fight with all my toys.
Yeah,
there was in the order that I wanted to.
Yeah,
yeah, but they were cool. So yes, we're working on them and painting up some other Dark Oath bits. I'd like to have that army painted ready for fourth edition because it was quite a different Slaves of Darkness army without all the Chaos Warriors and Varangard and stuff. It was more Chaos Wastes, a bit more. I don't know. The kind of army you'd expect to see in like the old world storming down from the mountains.
Well, you said so yourself, Matt. It was the first horde type army you've had for a while. You've been quite elite just recently, but
yeah,
you had a lot of models. You had more models than I did.
Outnumbering Skaven, that's a win, isn't it? So I've been working on the Dark Oath. There's about 800 of them left to paint. And I've also been building a Troll Hag, who is a beautiful, beautiful model. She recently returned to the range with the Orcs and Goblins release for the Old World, so built her up, and I've got a 2,000 point troll herd list ready for anyone who wants to fight a load of trolls.
I might be up for that. I've been having a bit of the Old World itch. I think I've seen a couple of battle reports the past couple of days. I think that's what's got the Old World juices flowing again.
Nice. So excited to pitter out for battle. But yeah, that's been the hobby. There's a few secret things on my desk at the minute as well. So the hobby never stops.
No, absolutely not. Jay, what about yourself?
It's not been good for me at the hobby last couple of weeks. My work... Well, it's like work-life balance at the moment is a bit screwed. So I've not been able to get much hobby in. The limits of my hobby have been reading through the Horus Heresy Libra Astartes book, looking at various Imperial Fist builds ready for the tournament.
That's your ritual July. Every night, isn't it, Jay?
Pretty much,
you go to bed, you pull out the book, you have a look at it.
You must have the most worn book of the Horus Heresy.
I've been following some of the Age of Sigmar articles that have been coming up. That all looks really, really interesting. But unfortunately, I've just not had the opportunity to get to my hobby desk in the last couple of weeks. Hopefully. It's still going to be a bit busy, I think, for the next couple of weeks still. But I'm hoping maybe mid-May it gets a bit easier.
Maybe when it quietens down, we'll pit your 1,500 point Imperial Fists against 1,500 points of Sol Exilia.
That'll be cool. That'll be good to see some Sol Exilia on the table.
Yeah, I'm ping ponging between colour schemes as well, because obviously I want them to be complementary to yours. And you've got a really nice, I don't know if you talked about them last episode, it's really nice like grim dark yellow that you've done for your Imperial Fists.
Yeah, and I've mixed in some like black plating as well on some of the armor. So some of the tactical wings are painted. They've got like black shoulder pads. My dreadnought's got some black plating on it, and my praetor's basically in black armor, but I've painted just the arms and shoulder pads yellow. So I think I'm going to lean into sort of like the Templar Brethren, who have a bit more black armor on them, and make them like almost veterans of the Imperial Fists, but just make them a little bit different than just a plain yellow army. But I've enjoyed painting them.
See, I'm leaning back into my army coming from Necromunda, Jay.
Yeah,
fits the lore, doesn't it? The colour scheme will predominantly grey fatigues, because, you know, that's the thing, isn't it? But we're going to go blues and yellows like the Palanite Enforcers from Necromunda, but I'll match the yellow to your yellow.
That'll look really, really cool, yeah.
And then maybe sprinkle in some of the more exotic resin kits from Necromunda for some of the command squads and stuff. I don't know, we'll go a bit funky, I think.
Yeah, that'll look cool, that'll look cool.
Excellent stuff. Some nice heresy. I mean, I always rely on Jay to talk heresy, because he's always doing some sort of heresy at some point. For me, I've been kind of doing little bits and bobs of hobbying. I think, although it doesn't have a hobby spring to mind, my hobby room had kind of run away with itself and was becoming a bit of a wasteland. It was becoming a bit, well, deadly, really. There were sprues everywhere. So that's taken some time to tidy, and I'm hoping to have a big clear out soon as well.
Did you fail any dangerous terrain tests, Dave?
I did. I stood on some sprues and they really hurt. Especially the really spiky bits on like the corners and the center of the sprue. That some of those were quite painful. Anyway, I digress. Some actual hobby stuff. I have built Thankul and Bone Ripper, and Bone Ripper's basically done now. He took quite a long time, not because he was hard to paint, but because I wanted to do as good a job on him as possible. I think you saw him when he was about, I don't know, two-thirds done, Matt, I think.
Okay, he was looking really good there.
But I haven't yet started on Thankul. He's primed, he's ready to go, so I'm hoping to get him done in the next couple of days. I also still have a half-painted Doom Wheel that needs to be finished and then glued together. I was hoping to use that in our game the other day, but I didn't want to rush and, you know, glue it all back together. If I'm going to take time to paint it, then let's finish it first and then glue it all together.
Is there much Skaven left then for you, your army ready into 4th edition?
No, the only thing really that I haven't got painted yet is that I've got a Hellpit Abomination, but I remember the other day when I dug it out, the reason I haven't painted it yet is because I got it secondhand off somebody and there's part of it missing, so there's a big gaping hole in the side. I'm thinking of just putting some green stuff over it.
I was going to say, with a Hellpit Abomination, nobody could be anything, could So that could be where the rats come out when you kill it.
Yeah. So I might do that and try and get him painted before the new edition lands, because he'll be fairly straightforward. He's a lot of skin, so contrast is your friend there. So yeah, I think once that's done, Matt, that's pretty much. I have found probably another 30 clan rats, but I'm not going to bother painting them now.
30 clan rats,
yeah. The new one's on the way. So I've been having some fun with this game. And obviously, we had a game which was great fun. Staying with the Sigmar theme, I picked up, I think his name is Mordin, the new Lord Arcanum that was released. It was like an anniversary thing, was it? It was a
celebration of third edition, the Cruel Boy in a Stormcast.
He's a really cool model. I'm trying a slightly different scheme on him for my new Stormcast, which I'm hoping to paint up for the Dawnbringer Crusade Warhammer Store incentive that's going on at the moment. So he's kind of silver armor, but I'm going for like purple cloth, which is really, really cool. So I've enjoyed painting him. He's nearly finished as well. I've only really got the base and maybe a layer of skin and some dry brushing on him to do. But he's been really fun. I think the only other notable thing to really mention is I attended a Purple Sparkle Unicorn one-day event last weekend. 1,000 points of 40K, free games. Took the old tank company along. So aside from, I can't remember what I called him, DX06, who was my tech priest, everything else was a tank. It was a great day. I fought two lots of Drakari, a kind of more shooty Drakari and a more combat Drakari, which I stood much more chance against, and an incredibly annoying Hypercrypt Legion Necron army, who I got zero kill points against because the things wouldn't stand still and I didn't have any firing lanes to really to do any damage to him. At least I just couldn't take a unit out, really. And he had a Void Dragon stalking my tanks. So but overall it was a great day, underlined by the fact that I got a surprise painting nomination, which I was really pleased about.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I was expecting my little tanks to pick that up, so I didn't win. I think it was, I can't remember who won now.
The hobby won.
The hobby one. That's right, Matt. That's a good answer. It's a good answer. But yeah, it was a really enjoyable day. I'm really proud of that paid nomination. It's already up on my shelf, proudly displayed. So yeah, great day of gaming. And quite a good couple of weeks of hobby as well.
Amazing.
That brings our first section of this podcast to a close, but we have plenty more to get through. So we're going to take a slight pause and come back with this week's news. So what do we have in this week's news, Matt?
Well, we've got quite a few things revealed over the last couple of weeks. First of all, guys, do you want some Middle-earth strategy battle game news? It's been very quiet for a while on the old strategy battle game, but we had a new Road Goes Ever On and On article revealing that the next release, I guess, for Middle-earth is going to be Arnor. And they showed off the new Knights of Arnor, which looked really cool. And there's a little tease of what is probably an Arnor standard bearer of some description. Now, I'm just going to spit out some ideas here. And Andy and Jay, and are you a Middle-earth fans? What if this is maybe going to be a book, the War with Angmar, maybe? That was a historical battle up in the north while the forces of Arnor took on the forces of Angmar.
We used to have was it Arathorn, Aragorn's father? I'm pretty sure he had a model.
Yeah, he was based up there. It's one of the Dunedin, wasn't he?
Yeah. It'd be nice to see some Middle-earth love, but the Angmar sort of region, it never really grabbed me. So
no?
I'll have to wait and see.
Spooky ghosts and creepy crawlies and Nazgul. I don't know, that sounds pretty cool to me.
Yeah, I mean, it could be cool. I'm interested to see what it does and get my hands on the supplement book. Because like we've seen with like the Fall of the Necromancer, you don't really need a lot of models to actually play through, you know, all the scenarios and stuff. So yeah, it could be interesting. I mean, the Knights of Angmar I like them. I think they're one of those models that you look at and I don't like the green on them.
I think funny how people are, because I look at them and I really like the green on them.
So, well, if it is an Angmar versus Arnor book, and then which side Jay's fighting for, we'll control the bad guys, Andy.
Yeah, that's fine.
The thing with Arnor, though, see, I nearly started an Arnor army a long time ago. There was a handful of models, and you can't get them on anymore. I don't know if they've been in and out of rotation, but the list, you're allowed to take 33% hobbits. So, you know. Cavalry and hobbits, that's kind of my dream army there.
I know they were a different army, weren't they, than all the fiefdoms of the I don't know, was it Minas Tirith army? I don't know, where you had the Swan Knights of Dol Amroth, and there were the guys with the kilts and that kind of thing. Yeah. Was Arnor a part of that army? Or was
its own standalone army. So I think technically it's a historical army, and these were the Dunedain, so all the Rangers, which I think at the time you just used the standard Ranger kit, but they represented the lone wanderers up in the north, and the little kind of like, I think it's a colony up on the border near Angmar where the Witch King was hanging out after Sauron was defeated, and it was basically just plucky humans and some hobbits and some handy rangers fighting off horrific monsters. So that'd be cool if they kind of revisit that and add some new models. So yeah, yeah. So new Middle-earth stuff on the way. There's also a special birthday coming up. This month it is issue 500 of White Dwarf magazine.
Yeah.
Which is a big old milestone, isn't it?
Especially in today's sort of world where, you know, magazines aren't quite as read as they used to be.
Exactly, yeah. So alongside, I think it's a 196-page bumper edition of White Dwarf, they are also releasing a special edition Grombrindle model, and this is just beautiful. Oh. Jay, I know you've already said you want this in your old world army.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's an amazing looking dwarf, isn't it? I mean, the White Dwarf models are always something special, but this one is brilliant. And it's cool because you've got, there's quite a few cool little bits on him. So if you look around his base, for example, obviously you've got like the Chaos Shield and the Chaos Helmet, a very distinctive looking Chaos Helmet. And then there's also, I believe is it one of the Cruel Boys shields?
Yeah.
Scare Shield.
And then I think that is that a Skaven spear as well that's sort of sticking out of the ground. So it's really cool to see all these little sort of nods to other armies and game systems, really. But oh yeah, he's certainly going on a square base in my Dwarf Old World army. That axe is so, I mean, the whole model's just really, really nice.
It's beautifully painted as well, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it
is stunning. Yeah.
Lots of cool detail on him.
I remember they've done a lot of these over the years. I remember was it 30 years of White Dwarf one back in 2007, where it was the White Dwarf held aloft by Gotrek and Bugman. Yeah.
So, I've got a couple of the old White Dwarf models as well in my army, my Dwarf army. I think I've got two or three different White Dwarf models, including a really, really old one. I'm not sure when it's dated from, actually.
No, that's cool. I don't know what's in the issue, and I'm guessing this will be a long time ago. You used to have to be a subscriber to get the limited White Dwarf models. I don't think that's going to be the case now. I think it's going to be just available on the website. But that's ace, because everyone will want one, won't they?
I think the social media. I think I saw somebody had put something on one of the official channels saying, can you get this without subscribing? And the social media team from GW said, you don't have to subscribe to get this.
Yeah.
And what's also cool as well is within the issue, you're going to get Legends rules. So you can use the White Dwarf in your games of Age of Sigmar, should you wish. I imagine it's going to be quite a few points. But and he's also getting rules for Warcry and the
Curse City
board
as well.
Game Curse City. Yeah. Oh, so that's really cool.
Yeah, and they've gone straight in with Legends for this rather than it being like, you know, overpowered super rules straight into the fourth edition. He's a display piece first and foremost, isn't he? But I'm sure lots of people, I could use him in a Fire Slayer army as a Rune Father or something, maybe, if I wanted to.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, it's a really nice model. Gotta pick him up. Another interesting reveal today that I don't think anybody expected coming was, you know, Darktide, the video game based on the miniatures game Warhammer 40,000. Well, they're making a miniatures game based on the video game based on the miniatures game. Darktide, the miniatures game, the board game. This looks different. So it's, at first glance, I was like, have they gone like Warhammer Underworlds?
Well, that's what I thought when I saw the hexes, yeah.
But it actually looks more like if, I don't know, Blackstone Fortress and Kill Team had a baby and then got some old models from other Pushfit kits and put them all in one box. The article kind of suggests that it's kind of like Kill Team Light for introducing people to kind of like the mechanics of Kill Team. And it's going to have four, there's no new models in there. They're all returning models, which is a bit of a shame because I think they could have gone a bit further in making the four like characters look more like the video game equivalents, but
they've picked good ones in place of them. It's a good little unit of models to represent the main characters from Darktide.
Yeah, and it's a 1-4 player cooperative as well, so I could see us sitting around a table and taking on some cultists and stuff. I suspect there's going to be a nice little kind of game that you can maybe play in a lunch break at Warhammer World or, you know, between other games. So yeah, looking forward to seeing this.
I think it's going to be an absolute given. It looks so much better than that Space Marine board game they released to tie into the now delayed Space Marine 2. The one that you got what's his name? What's the main character
Titus?
Called? Titus, yeah. So he's a cool model, but that board game looked, let's be honest, pants. So this looks much better than that.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. So looking forward to seeing how it works. If it's got a bit of, you know, I don't know, like say the boys, Jay, if they were getting into Warhammer, maybe that's a better in for them in more of a board game format than a, you know, the complexity of a 6x4 foot board.
Smaller model count, yeah, self-contained.
Yeah, so be interested to see how it goes. I suspect this will be one that will appeal to, you know, people who maybe played the video games and want to kind of dip the toe into tabletop gaming, but, you know, don't quite want to spend £300 on an army. So, yeah, that is on the way soon, apparently. And as ever, we've had a load of Age of Sigmar 4th edition reveals too. These have been coming thick and fast, really. And I think we have learned most of the kind of game mechanics now already, which is a way quicker pace than the reveal that we saw for 40K, I think it's safe to say. Though, you know, we're probably only a couple of weeks off, you know, seeing this in the flesh because we've got the event at Warhammer World that we're going to, haven't we?
Yeah.
But I think a lot of the big stuff we revealed. We'll talk models first. There's been a couple of new models shown off since the last time we chatted, including a new Warlock Engineer, Dave.
Hey, yeah, I like this guy. He's kind of over the top enough. He's like a sniper rat. I mean, that's cool. And he's got like a little telescope thing. He, you know, we've seen his war scroll as well, which I really liked. He can buff units of Jezails, which it looks like we're probably going to get in the starter box because they were in that video, the cinematic. So he's going to buff those. Oh yeah, you're going to have to hide your characters better, guys. Because he's going to be picking them off.
I really like that. He's not a caster.
No.
But like you say, he's more of a support. One of the things that we worried about with the new edition of the game was that it'd go to 40K with like characters assigned to units and stuff. That doesn't seem to be a thing. We're seeing a few things in here where Lookout Sir does exist. It's now called Guarded Heroes. And it works pretty much the same way. If you are within range of a unit that is not a hero and there's no like limit on the size of the unit now, you can just be like next to one guy, it's minus one to hit you. And also if you're further than 12 inches away, you can't shoot them. Awesome. Mm. That's, you know, it takes some of the updated bit rules for that from third edition and it takes it a bit further in that. The kind of wounds thing doesn't matter anymore. As long as you're a war machine, you get that rule. And then as long as you're infantry, you get the you can't be shot thing, which again makes sense because if you sat on a mount, you can probably be picked out with a sniper rifle, can't you? However, your chap doesn't care about that, does he, Dave?
No, that's what I was just about to say. An article explaining how the new Lookout's equivalent works in an article about a rat that ignores those rules.
It's a good way to. I always think rules exceptions are a good way to explain rules, though, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
So he basically ignores that rule. He picks a hero to go, nope, you're not getting that. And then all his mates get to shoot that target.
Yeah. And I tell you what's also really cool and also very, very scathing, and I'm glad they're carrying on this, is that he does D3 damage, but you can roll a dice. I think it's the end of your movement phase. As long as he hasn't moved, you roll the dice. On a 2+, he does flat 3 damage rather than D3 damage. However, if you roll that elusive 1, you take D3 mortal wounds, which I love. That is a scathing to me.
It is. Gamble. And also, every time you're going to roll a 1, aren't you, Dave? Because that's what you do.
Well, he gets 2 shots, so you could kill him before he actually gets to do anything. So, yeah, that's... It's a brilliant model, not too over the top, in keeping with again, like we said with the clan rats, like there, it's close enough to like the old design, but still feeling new.
And you know what I love about this guy? Like he could just have like a scope on his rifle, but nah, he's got a telescope. He then puts the telescope down and gets his rifle without a scope and then shoots vaguely in the direction of his telescope.
He's just got a really good memory.
He's got a rat on his shoulder. Maybe he like whispers in his ear. Like,
I like his mechanical leg.
Yeah, his claw leg.
So yeah, looking forward to it. And they obviously tease that there's going to be a lot more classic characters coming back as well. So yeah, very, very excited.
Yeah, I
can't really. I really like the paint job on this guy as well. I think the paint job is really, really cool. Lots of detail on him. And like the sort of textures of his like leather gloves,
that wooden stock on his barrel and the sort of tarnished metal as well. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, I think the thing with the studio Skaven Army, a lot of it's been from like Warhammer Fantasy, hasn't it? So I think with obviously the new stuff, they've been able to go to town as the centerpiece, like bad guys, aren't they, this edition? So yeah, lots of cool, like the Vergius on the bomb he's standing on, I assume it is. Yeah, lots of nice cool stuff. However, if you prefer the other half of the launch box, we also saw the Stormcast Reclusions. Now, this is a really, really cool looking unit.
But he's a character, isn't he?
It's a unit. It's a unit. A unit of three with two little bearer things. Stormcast with big axes and shields, and then little kind of mortal bearer things, which I think the article alludes to. They're like grandchildren or something. They're like, and they're the lineage.
They're like, they're basically trying to help them hang on to what memories and stuff they have, aren't they?
Yeah, these guys have gone, like, if there's a scale of 1 to 10 of how, like, not quite with it the Stormcast are, I think these guys are a good like 18. So they're like, oh, bring this fella's like niece along just in case he remembers that he's still human deep down somewhere.
What you can't see in the priest's cloak is a load of photo books. It's like, do you remember this day we went to the beach? Look at this picture. Here we are playing with some sand. Remember these memories.
Oh, it's all right, Dad. We'll get you home and put some movies on after this.
Just go kill a few rats first and then we'll head back.
But again, it kind of takes what they built with the Vigilators, was it? Vigilus, all those guys in the new Stormstrike armor, and kind of goes a bit further with that ornate kind of like big, I guess, Sigmar sun motif above their heads and almost power axe looking weapons.
Yeah. I personally am a big fan of the two axe pose on them. I think they look proper good. Good.
Proper bow. So, again, presumably, these are probably in the launch box too, aren't they? As is all the stuff we'll probably see revealed over the next few Mondays. So that's the new models that we've seen. There's also been quite a bit talked about the new rules as well. So I thought we'd have a little bit of a round table chatting about them. So command abilities, and I'll preface this whole section by saying everything that I was worried about for 4th edition doesn't seem to be happening. So awesome days. It looks like the best of 3rd and 2nd and then some, with just tiny bits taken for 40k rather than just being a copy and paste of it. So command points are still a thing. Each player gets 4 command points at the start of each battle round. Awesome. There's no longer getting some in your turn and some in the opponent's turn. You get those command abilities and you can do whatever you want to do with them. If you have built your army so it's got fewer number of auxiliary units, you get an extra command point every battle round, which is great. That rewards fluffy builds. I like that it's kind of going to dissuade people from taking the kind of list that Jay doesn't like, where you're spamming units because they're powerful. You will get less command points if you take that kind of list, which is cool. And also, if you're losing, you get an extra command point too, which is also very nice. Everything works the same way as it used to. Each unit can only use 1 command point per phase. Each command can only be used once per phase. All that jazz. Some of them are the same. So we've got all that attack and all that defense. Still work exactly how they used to. 1 command point each at the double. You don't make a run roll. You instead add 6. I believe, I might be misquoting here, but you used to be able to roll it and then spend it, didn't you?
No, I don't think you could.
Have you not been able to? Well, ignore me then. That works exactly the same as it did, as does rerolling the charge, your favourite command point, Dave. Now, a lot of the others, though, have changed quite a bit. So Rally was a bit of a point of contention in Age of Sigmar. That's been reworked entirely and has elements of the heroic heal, heroic action as well. By the way, heroic actions aren't a thing anymore. So Rally, instead, you roll 6d6, and for each 4+, you can either heal a wound on a unit or return models as long as you've got enough Rally points. So say if you've got a unit of Colonel Hunters, Jay, They've got 5 wounds each. If you rolled, say you had a unit of 3 of them, one's dead, one's taken 2 wounds, you can choose to rally it. You roll 6d6 for each 4+. You could either heal the wounded Kurnoth, or if you manage to get 5 4+s, bring back a dead Kurnoth hunter. I think that's a really nice way of doing that and still be able to have the benefit of bringing back big models if you roll well, or if you don't, be able to heal up the models that are in that unit. Obviously, for line infantry, kind of one wound stuff, then yeah, you're going to be able to bring back, well, on average, 3 models, which is pretty cool. You can also use it on heroes or monsters or whatever. It's a nice little way of, and it's a command point, so it's costing you 1 UV4 command points a turn, but it's a nice way of keeping things topped up. What do we all think of the new rally?
It's much more balanced than it was when it first came out. I remember people taking units of 4 concussors or fulminators, 3 of them getting killed, and then you'd roll rally and getting 2 6s and getting 2 of them back. Yeah. So, I think it's a lot better. I think realistically, it's probably going to be, like you say, for those little units. I could definitely see myself doing it on some Mortec Guard, resurrecting them and then hoping that they get killed, and I'm hoping that crematoriums still explode when they die. So I think it's a much more streamlined, and I think it's a much more balanced way of looking at the rally command. So yeah, thumbs up.
Yeah, and you can still spike and bring back an expensive model, but you're gonna have to roll well to do that rather than just a lucky 6. Redeploy is back in a slightly different way. You still move a unit d6 inches, but it now happens at the end of the movement phase, so you can't kind of like redeploy into the way of something mid other player's turn. Now, Unleash Hell has changed into covering fire. Now, for a command point, you can shoot in your enemy's shooting phase. A lot of these seem very much inspired by Horus Heresy with reactions and stuff. So, I don't know, you're fighting Jay's Lumineth and they're doing shenanigans with their bows and stuff. You could choose to spend one of your precious command points, Dave, and shoot in Jay's shooting phase. However, you have to shoot the nearest enemy unit and you're -1 to hit. I really like that.
Yeah, I like it.
I prefer it, yeah.
That's good.
Better than being able to just like be obliterated if you charge him for reasons. And also a brand new one, counter charge. In the charge phase, for 2 command points, you can charge with one of your units in the enemy charge phase. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's really good.
You can picture knights sallying forth and making a heroic charge into enemy lines. And that really as well adds a bit of like, you've got to be careful in your charge phase that you don't accidentally get yourself set up to be charged by the enemy's best unit.
I like it. I think that's a really good addition, especially for your combat armies.
Yeah, so it costs you half your command points at 2 command points, but seems pretty good. Another one that I think Jay will like is that for a command point, you can cast a spell or do a prayer in your enemy's magic phase.
Oh, cool.
So having, you know, these big multicast wizards being able to use one of their casts in the enemy turn, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And sounds again, like you've got a lot of options now.
Way more options, yeah. And like, I guess if you were playing your Lumineth, Jay, and you were against a low magic enemy, you kind of lose the benefit of that in their turn, where now you can still keep pushing on magical damage in their turn.
Sounds good.
Which is pretty cool. And then the last new one is Power Through. And this is a way of getting your kind of units and heroes out of dodge. So they talk about kind of monsters and chariots and stuff being able to kind of barge their way through. But essentially, you pick a unit that's charged. Your model has to have a higher wounds characteristic than what they're fighting. If they do, you can move out of combat and deal D3 mortal wounds to what you were fighting at the end of the turn. So basically, you can charge in with a dragon or a monster or something, do a load of stuff, and then just barge your way out of combat. or like chariots is a great example because they tend to do mortal wounds and stuff on the charge, don't they?
Yeah.
To be able to charge in, get them out of there, then set them up for maybe using the counter charge strategy in your opponent's turn.
Yeah.
Makes them feel more like a chariot would on the battlefield, where in Age of Sigmar, really, those units just get bogged down, or there's the kind of units where you'll be like, well, I may as well charge them to stop myself from being charged.
Mm.
And now it kind of takes away from that a little bit. So I really like that. Jay, you're probably less close to these than us. I know you've kind of been away from Age of Sigmar for third edition. Does that kind of stuff tempt you back in with more interactive and reaction style mechanics there?
I am looking forward to playing it and trying it. Definitely, yeah. It does seem really, really exciting. It sounds like, a fair few more options now in a turn. It sounds though like Battlefield is going to be quite sort of fluid and mobile. I mean, that power through, you know, extra movement and extra shooting and extra magic. Yeah, I like it. It's going to be quite destructive, it seems. So a lot more damage being dished out.
Yeah. And I think AOS has always been a movement game where they're like, yeah, but it's a war game, isn't it? Get fighting, lads. Yeah. Seems to be the takeaway from this one. They talked about battle tactics as well. Battle traits. So your army rules, your abilities. Now, one of the things that we were worried about, and we were chatting about this just last episode, was that, are we going to see a 40K situation where you get the free rules, and you get the one, like, detachment, for want of a better word. And then, when the book comes out, you get the full options. But it looks like at launch in the faction packs, which are the kind of like the get-you-buy stuff until the Codex comes out, the battle tome comes out, there's going to be at least four battle formations.
Mm-hmm.
So even with the get-you-buy rules from the start, you have got options to customize your army in different directions. I really like that. That's one of the things that didn't land so well with 40K for me. I don't know about you guys.
I completely agree. Yeah, I prefer this.
So yeah, and there's fun stuff. They mentioned like there's a Stormcast one that favors like units. There's a Stormcast one that favors dragons. I guess we'll probably see these for all the kind of army builds that you'd have in the past
are
probably going to get represented in these.
Yeah.
Combat has also had a bit of a rework as well. So everyone can now fight if you're within 3 inches. So weapon rangers for melee are gone. And weapon rangers
I'm just thinking of a Lumineth Spearman.
Oh, yeah, exactly, yeah. So they can fight within 3 inches. But coherency is now down to half an inch. So essentially, realistically, your units are kind of like base to base almost, aren't they?
It's almost old world, isn't it? Yeah,
that's what I mean. Yeah, another pet peeve of mine was, we didn't get it too much, but you go to some tournament where people have stringed out their units precisely where it's just going to stop shenanigans and... I don't know. It feels less like a war game to me then, where it's more about, maximising that net of you can't move there.
For me, I think they sorted it when they brought out third edition, where it's within an inch of, is it two models, but only if you're like more than six or more models. I kind of felt like that sorted out the conga lines, as they used to call them, where you just string out a unit just to, control the board space and stuff like that. I'm kind of a little bit on Jay's side, where I kind of look at that and think, that's kind of old world, like rank and file. I don't know. That's one thing that I've kind of looked at the new edition, and I kind of want to see it in the flesh. I kind of want to play a game and see how my army looks like. I've been working on Ossiot Bone Reapers recently, and if they're all going to be sort of like within half an inch of each other, is it easier just to get movement trays?
Your Bone Reaper example, I quite like that. It feels more like a shield wall of skeletons moving up the battlefield, and And I guess that's a personal taste thing, isn't it? But visually, I always tend to put my models like next to each other anyway and just slide them round anyway because it just looked nicer. Your Luminous is another good example, Jay. They look really nice ranked up as like a tight formation without having to worry about them being like, you know, an inch away from each other.
Yeah.
And it does mention that some units, particularly bigger things like Stormdrake Guard, will have on their War Scroll a different coherency range, and that's probably to account for wings and big bits. But I really like the sound of all this stuff that we've seen. We get a few things from both Heresy and both 40K in here, where weapons now have keywords. So an example that they give, shields have the anti-charge rule. So if you charge a unit with spears, the spears get additional rend, which is great. So you have, you know, again, your Luminith, Jay.
Yeah.
Their job is to sit on an objective, and if you charge them, you know you're going to take more damage. And then you take your blade, whatever they're called in the Luminith, there you'll take things off objectives unit, and they'll have a different keyword, maybe hits of six automatically wound or something. There's also weapons that are anti-infantry or anti-monster, and they'll do additional rend against specific targets. I quite like that it's not over the top with those anti-abilities, and it just increases the rend rather than it being you automatically. I don't like the 40, I think 40k is a bit too far, where on a hit of a six against a tank, you automatically wound it. That seems a bit too powerful when you can roll lots of dice. This just means they're slightly stronger against that unit without automatically wounding them, if that makes sense.
Gives every unit a roll depending on the war gear and weapons they've got, which I like. Because, like, again, using also Bone Reapers, you know, you've got Mortec Guard with spears. Well, you might want to put them up front so they take the charge, but then have the Mortec Guard with the hand weapon shields as kind of like a counter charge unit. So I like the fact that war gear plays a part now.
Yeah, definitely. They also mention that retreating is a thing. So Battleshock is gone in completely. Battleshock was always a bit of mental gymnastics. Nobody really liked it. And it really just boiled down to, if you've lost really badly, roll a dice. Great, you've lost that many more models. Or you just ignored those rules completely. It was a bit silly. So that is gone entirely. Shooting in combat is no longer a thing either now, apart from specific units that are allowed to do that, which again means pinning down those range units makes sense now, and there's a point to it. Caradon players aren't probably going to love that, but you know, I think that's more fun for players.
I think the boats, the Caradon boats, will have that shooting into combat rule because that's their thing, really.
Yeah, they're flying above the battlefield shooting at you.
Makes sense for the Arcanauts to have it, wouldn't they? Because they've got the pistols and the swords.
Yeah,
you know, we're going to be.
Yeah,
and I think it's going to be make sense based on what the models armed with, which is the key thing. Retreat has changed now. Before, retreat was a bit cheap, where there wasn't really any downside to retreating. You couldn't shoot, you couldn't charge, but those units that you were retreating were probably units that were just there to make sure you've got the objective.
Yeah.
Where now, if you retreat, your unit takes D3 mortal wounds as the enemy cuts you down as you're running away.
Nice.
It makes it have a cost for retreating again. Really, really good. I'm loving all this so far. The final little nugget of information we've got as well is about magic. So on the war scroll, there's a keyword, wizard, and then in brackets after it, it's got a number. That's your wizard level, and that determines how many spells they can cast, and unbind and banish. So that all works the same as it does today, but with spells being able to be cast in both players' turn, Jay, I don't know, you might want to cast a spell, unbind an endless spell that's on the battlefield, and you maybe hold fire on your third cast in case Jay casts a spell using a command point. You've got a few more things to do rather than, especially for like Teclis and Nagash, sometimes you just run out of spells to cast, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So you've got other things to do with them later. Spell laws have changed massively as well. Rather than picking a spell per wizard, as part of your army creation, you pick a spell law and then all your wizards have access to every spell from that spell lore. Imagine your Sylvaneth Jay having access to the entire range of spells and be able to cast them when you need to, rather than picking a spell at, when you're writing the list and then maybe regretting that on game three of a tournament.
Yeah, that's a good change, I think, because you can just enjoy, you know, you choose what you want to play with and just enjoy it. You're not, yeah, I like that.
That was my favourite change from the Magic phase.
Yeah, it also mentions. Oh, go on, Andy.
See, I'm hoping that there's more than six spells in a spell lore, because again, if you've got like Lumineth, pretty much every character is a wizard, aren't they? Mm. You might find that if there's only six spells in the spell lore, you might actually run out of spells to cast, or you're forced to cast other spells because you've used the good spells early on. I mean, I like the fact that it's simpler. You know, you can just pick a spell lore and you go, and you can learn that spell lore without having to worry about three other spell lores or whatever. But I want to know more.
Yeah.
You want to know more.
That's the issue.
I mean, one of the things they mention is that some spells have the unlimited keyword, which means that they can be cast by multiple wizards as well. So there might be a Lumineth, arcane bolt kind of spell that can be cast multiple times across the army, but not by the same wizard twice. So that's pretty cool. It also mentions that endless spells have changed quite a bit. And what's happened is that they've taken all the existing endless spells, presumably the race-specific ones will sit within a lore of magic, and then all of the malign portents. Was it Malign Portents? Whatever it was called.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
The original endless spells will be split into a number of different spell lores. And it's unclear whether you replace picking a spell lore with picking some endless spells. I think that's the intent, but it's not super clear in the article. You may have access to a spell lore and a summoning lore, maybe. But it would make sense if it's like, okay, instead of taking the lore of whatever, I'm going to take the lore of cast a load of endless spells.
Yeah. Mm. So you may then want to have a dedicated caster purely for your endless spells, because they'll have that lore.
Well, you can't because you pick a lore. That's what I mean. You pick a lore for your army. You don't say a wizard caster has a lore and a wizard has endless spells. It's one or the other. That's why it's unclear on the article. I suspect you'll be able to do both, because they won't want people to not buy the endless spell box because they want to use the spells on their
book. Yeah, it's going to be like, do I have this, you know, take for example the faction specific endless spells. Let's take the Skaven, for example. If you choose your lore to be your Skaven endless spells, that's only three spells that you can cast. Yeah. And obviously all of those are really a stay in game one, so your casters are going to feel a little bit redundant. So yeah, there must be something there to allow you to do a bit of both.
Unless you get to pick kind of two, you get to pick one spell law and then one endless
manifestation law. Yeah, and it's specifically called a manifestation law, and that's good because it means that racers without access to their own endless spells just take, I don't know, the manifestation law with the purple sun in it.
Yeah,
you know, an example that they give is that the morbid conjuration manifestation law has the purple sun, suffocating gravetide, malevolent maelstrom, and the soul snare shackles. So I think you'll be able to pick a spell lore and a manifestation lore, and then all your wizards can then cast anything from them. And that, I guess, gets around your problem that you were saying, Andy, where that gives you another four spells to cast in addition to your six on your sheet.
Yeah.
And importantly, it'll sell some more endless spells.
Absolutely, yeah. Because every army wants to take some endless spells. Again, Jay, you're probably the one with the most magical heavy army that hasn't played recently. Do these changes kind of appeal to you for bringing you back, for giving you potentially endless spells that you can just take, you know, base to theme all your armies and bring them along, and being able to cast more spells and have more kind of fun stuff going on with magic?
Definitely. And this is a real good improvement, I think. I mean, the fact that you just
given more flexibility to use all your cool stuff. And I can't see that any downside to that.
And
really.
The key word, these endless spells don't cost points. You just pick a manifestation lore as part of your army.
Yeah.
So it's not like having to, quote marks, waste points on your endless spells.
Yeah, I just think that's great because some of these endless spell models are really, really cool. And, you know, a lot of them, it's hard for me to say really, so I haven't played that much. I don't go to that many events, Age of Sigmar, I've not been for a while. But certainly when I have been making lists, you either pick one that you think, well, that's going to come in handy and then the other ones are just discounted. But no, I really like this idea of just having a bit more freedom and flexibility to use all these cool toys and rules that are in your book. But ordinarily, probably in the previous editions, you just would struggle to try and use in a game for various reasons.
Yeah. One of the things that I always never liked was prayers. Prayers are weird in Age of Sigmar. Normally, I mean, in the early days, it was roll the dice on a one, you take some wounds on a 3+, the prayer happens. If your enemy hasn't got a priest, tough, nothing you can do about it. When in the fourth edition, it's more like some board games that we've played where priests will each turn roll the dice. And on a 2+, they'll generate a number of points equal to the dice roll. So turn one, they might generate 2 points. Turn three, they might generate 6 points. And then their abilities then have a point cost that they spend those points from. So Khorne, for example, Witchbane Curse, it costs 4 points. So once you've accrued enough points, you can deduct 4 points in order to do that ability and it goes off. Or it's got a more powerful version on 8. So your choice is, do I use these points now to cast the weaker version, or do I maybe sit this through another turn to accrue enough power to do the more powerful version? It kind of takes me back to the Winds of Power, Winds of Magic kind of abilities in old Warhammer, early edition Warhammer, where you had like cards that had this kind of mechanic. Again, it doesn't look like there's any counterplay to stop prayers, but that's balanced by the fact of it's going to take you a turn or two to accrue the power to cast those prayers. Mm. And that gives the enemy a couple of turns to neutralize the priest before they start using their abilities. I think that's a cool change as well.
Yeah, yeah. I'm keen to see what priest abilities will get other than the ones that we've seen.
So, yeah, lots of cool stuff. I think outside of like battle tactics and grand strategies and stuff, I think we've seen most of the broad kind of like mechanics of the game now, and I've got to say I'm really excited for fourth edition.
Yeah, me too. I get excited every time I see a war scroll now to kind of see what's changed. Looking forward to next week when I believe we'll probably get another Stormcast reveal. I just want to see the whole lodge box.
Yeah, me too. I guess quick round table then. What armies are we building going into 4th edition? I mean, I've got my Dark Oath ready, and let's face it, I'm going to do a Stormcast army when it comes out. Dave, I'm guessing Skaven and Skaven.
So for me, obviously, I've got a large Skaven army. I intend to reinforce those with the new Skaven units. I see that less as a new army, more of a expanding the rats.
Yeah.
I do intend to also do a Stormcast army, Matt. I'm going to do a small Dawnbringer army for our local in-store event, starting with around about 500 points and building from there. Cool. So yeah, they'll probably be my new army.
Andy, I guess the Bone Reaper's ready for a fourth edition then?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a load of Bone Reaper stuff still to build. I think I've got one of the old Christmas boxes from like 2 years ago to build. I was really enjoying Blades of Khorne. So I might expand that. I've got loads of demons, but I haven't got a lot of immortal stuff. Same thing with Disciples of Tzeentch. I've got loads of demons, but not a lot of immortal stuff. So, yeah, I think it's going to be Bone Reapers and Blades of Khorne. But then I've got my Sons of Bearmat, so I want to get them on the table again.
Well, they're an exciting one, Andy. You know what I'd love to see? Them getting a new caster giant in their new book. But especially with all the magic stuff going on, I think that'd be really fun.
Yeah, I'd love to see another little Man Crusher variant. like a new kit, and maybe have like a shooting one carrying a cannon or
See, I was thinking about this the other day. Like, that is an old world kit, so will that eventually be going old world and we'll get a replacement, which is, I don't know, a multi kit that builds little different little giants. Like, maybe a little giant would be a caster and a shooter and a spearman unit.
Imagine a giant with a cannon holstered on his hip. That'd be amazing.
I mean, you have ogres.
Yeah, I mean, I can think of it like a man crusher spearman unit. He's just holding a bit of fence or something. Come charge me. How about you, Jay? Yeah. Now, you haven't really played any third edition. You've got quite a few armies, though. Are you looking to expand a previous one? Are you going to go start a new army for fourth edition?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, a new army, new edition is always a hard thing to resist. I have got a Sylvaneth army. I've got a big Lumineth army. I've got an old Dwarden Cities of Sigmar army as well. My old Iron Drakes and Iron Breakers on round bases. I'm not sure yet. I definitely want to see the rules. I have been thinking maybe a new Lumineth army or a Cities army, but I've not decided yet.
See, Cities of Sigmar is nice because you could introduce some of those old dwarf models, yeah. And then if they get replaced with awesome new dwarves, then just stick them on square bases and have them in the old world, then, can't you? Win-win. Awesome. So, yeah, so like I say, we are going to be down at the event at Warhammer World in a few weeks as well, so it probably won't be the next podcast. It'll probably be the podcast after that, unless we have an emergency extra podcast, maybe, Dave. Yeah. Either way, in the next, well, couple of weeks, really, we'll know more about the next edition of Warhammer.
Let us know if you're attending the Reforging event over at Warhammer World. Hopefully we'll get to see a few of you there. That was quite a lengthy news segment, but of course there was lots of Age of Sigmar news to kind of go through there. I just can't wait. It's going to be so good. We aren't quite finished with this week's podcast, though, so we're going to take a quick pause and we'll be right back.
So, if you've been on the internet since the Custodian Codex went up for pre-order, apparently there's a thing called women now. News to me. And don't worry, we're not going to go too far into that. But what I want to touch on is that lore changes often and regularly, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, a lot of people sometimes think that, like, the lore is set in stone and it is a holy text from Games Workshop that's always the same. And I think it's safe to say in most, like, battle tomes and codexes, things change quite a lot. I mean, Necrons are a really good example because they've gone through the whole range of changes, haven't they? When the Necrons first appeared, I don't know if any of you guys played back then, back in the Gork and Morka days, they were mentioned as like a little Easter egg on the planet Angelus, where Gork and Morka was set. There was these robots that were drifting out of the sand and getting people to their death, like a unseen killer. And then they kind of expanded it out into an army, and they had the first kits, and there were these high-tech raiding parties with scarabs that could destroy a tank. Not even kidding. They were horrific. And then they kind of changed that to this ancient eldritch horror that were fighting the old ones centuries ago. And then they changed it to space Egyptians. And then they changed it again. And the comedy, I guess the punchline is the first model that looked like a Necron was actually a Chaos model, a Chaos android.
I didn't know that.
Were they in Space Crusade?
They were, yeah. Chaos androids, yeah. And they were robots that had the mark of Chaos on them. And they looked like Necrons. They came back from the dead like Necrons. But the lore was very different. And we shouldn't be slaves to the lore, because at the end of the day, the lore exists to sell models, really. But Games Workshop's... the lore and the models go very hand in hand because they want you to build the story and build the narrative. But that doesn't mean they're not going to just discard stuff. One of the things that people often get hurt up about is like, it says this in this book, so it is true. If that was the case, there'd be some ridiculous stuff that still exists now. So I've got some examples from some really, really old books. I've got in front of me Rogue Trader, the original Warhammer 40,000 book. This is a venerable tome, and it had all sorts of wacky stuff in there. Like famous, and I'm sure he's still mentioned in current books now, Dave. I'm sure you'll know this. Famous Obi-Wan Inspector Clouseau. The famed
Crippman.
No. Interrogator Obi-Wan Clouseau.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
The famed Inquisitor, who's obviously just a joke name based on like Obi-Wan Kenobi and Inspector Clouseau, but it was lore. It was in the book. Like, for example, did you know that Tyranids often wear complex harnesses containing pockets and equipment pouches. Belts are worn. Belts are worn in a purely decorative mode and are carefully grown from cultured skin or fur.
Can you imagine a hive tyrant rocking around in there?
Army
jacket.
Do you want to guess at some of the weapons that a termagant can have, guys?
Last pistol, last rifle, shuriken catapult.
Yeah, the shuriken catapult they can have. Yeah. They can
Everyone used to be able to have a shuriken catapult.
Melter bombs. You can give melter bombs to a termagant if you want. A power axe, power glove, a las cannon, heavy plasma gun. Yeah, you know, it's not unheard of. And obviously, you know, the lore is not changed at all. The Tyranids themselves, they struggle on an alien. They're not from our like galaxy, are they? They don't cope very well. They don't like fighting in battle. So obviously your Tyranid army doesn't have any Tyranids in it, guys. It has Zotes in it. The Zotes are the most common of all the Tyranids, many specially engineered slave races. Yeah. Even the hulking spacecraft that composed the Hive fleets, dedicated to the single purpose of transporting the Zotes. They are completely independent living creatures, much like their masters. So yeah, the Zotes, movement 7, leadership 10, strength 4, they're pretty cool. You can make a major hero. That gives them a cool value of 10. Now that's, you know, something that's still in the game now, isn't it?
Cool values.
Yeah, you can give them some leather holsters. You know, that's important for carrying a bolt pistol, exactly like a Tyranid. So, yeah, I mean, we all remember our Astral Hounds as well for 40K. These Astral are large, Hound. Large shadowy dogs. They're carnivorous, but extremely predatory. They are psychic and they seek out psychic auras. Yeah, once helpless, unfortunate victims are taken back into warp space, the hounds feed on their psychic energy and disappear. I mean, I'm not being funny. There's been outrage on the internet for female custodies. Where's the outrage for the lack of astral hounds in 40K right now? vampires, obviously, existed in Warhammer 40,000.
The Blood Angels?
No, actual vampires.
Okay.
Yeah, vampires live amongst their chosen race. They have psychic powers and can control humans. They can drain the willpower of people and then turn them into zombies.
Nice. It's a good skill to have.
I'm not saying all this remove lore was good, just that it has changed.
I suppose if I wanted to be argumentative, the game was finding its feet then and has matured a lot. And a lot of the lore that we have now is a lot more embedded into what we play in the campaign books and things. But yeah, I think things still subtly change, don't they? I mean, otherwise we'd never get new units, new tanks, new armies.
Exactly. I mean, a good example is the Rogue Aldorn battle tank. Mm. I believe that, I mean, there's a lot of people saying that, you know, things have changed in the lore and Games Workshop said they've always existed. I don't think it says anywhere in the Astra Militarum Codex that the Rogue Dawn is a new tank or even a newly found tank. The book exists as if it's existed forever. And yeah. That generally is the way that GW write any lore updates. You know, a new model comes out. They want to represent it in the lore. The lore is unreliable. You know, we look at the Horus Heresy, Jay, even with the novels. There's so much ambiguity and grey, isn't there? Depending on who's like seeing what's happening.
That's part of the appeal.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think some people get a little bit too maybe focused on what is the lore. The lore is whatever it is at the time, and that's not a bad thing. Lore changes, lore develops, lore kind of advances. I was looking at the Realm of Chaos, The Lost and the Damned, which has the original Horus Heresy lore. And I've got in here the original story of Horus versus the Emperor.
Ooh.
Yeah. So now, obviously, some listeners will have read the End and the Death. Jay, you've read The End and the Death.
I have.
Just I'm gonna read some expert excerpts from this and just see how this compares to your experience with it. So it was just set the scene. Terror's almost fallen. It's not even called Terror. Earth is almost fallen. The shadows of spaceships are doing across it. Things are going pretty badly. From his throne, the Emperor watches his warriors mill around in confusion. The hall holds 10,000 men, seasoned veterans, and they're now all panicking. He knows they're more frightened by his silence than the enemy. They look to him for leadership. For the first time in his millennia-long life, the Emperor feels despair. The magnitude of his defeat stuns him. The lunar bases have fallen. The Earth is under the War Master's heel. Rebel titans surround the palace and only held bay by the desperate efforts of a few loyalists. Sire, what are your orders? Asks Rogor Dorn, the massive dark-haired Primarch of the Imperial Fists. His armour is dented by bolter shells. Apparently, the Emperor doesn't answer. He's lost within himself. He's come to the last dark place, the moment he's always dreaded. Is this where it ends? Horus was more than a trusted colleague, more like a
colleague.
Son. Yeah. Not for a second had the Emperor doubted him, not even when the word had come from the savage worlds that the War Master was gathering forces. The Emperor had deluded himself that Horus must have a good reason to do what he was doing without consulting him. He's not the War Master. He's a very naughty boy. The Emperor thinks that he may have failed in his precognition. Yeah, and it goes on. Sire, what are your orders? Says Sanguinius, the angel-winged Primarch of the Blood Angels. He gazes at the Emperor with blazing eyes, his face a mask of terrible beauty. Yeah, there's all sorts of crazy stuff. And it's the same kind of story beats, but obviously that's written very differently and the motivations of the characters are very different, aren't they?
Yeah.
I've never heard Horus referred to as a colleague.
Colleague.
It's more like a HR matter than anything, isn't it?
Yeah. All that heresy could have been sorted out with a meeting with HR.
Could have been.
He's my workplace associate.
We're gonna get some spoilers here. Sorry, guys. The War Master bestrides the body of a broken angel. Now this was quite a traumatic bit in the End of the Death. So we'll just see how 1980s version compares to it. Behind him, the tortured earth fills the viewport. A bauble for Horus to seize with one clawed hand. Corpses of marines lie everywhere. Face glowing with internal bloodlight, Horus speaks. Poor Sanguinius. I offered him a position of power in the new order. He could have sat at the right hand of the gods. Alas, he chose to align with the losing side. The Emperor stands transfigured. In the end, he can only whisper, "Why?" Mad laughter rings out. Why? You ask me why? Weak fool. Your timidity prevented you from binding the forces of chaos. I, Horus, master of chaos, will lead humanity into a new age. So, yeah, a bead of sweat stands on the Emperor's forehead. You are deluded, he says. It kind of sounds like a bad anime, doesn't it?
I was waiting for the part where it explains when Sanguinius put on that dress.
That's skirted over on here.
Skirted over, like we did there.
Yeah. And then a Terminator shows up and it distracts the Emperor, and then Horus kills the Terminator, and the Emperor goes, oh no, he's killed a Terminator. And then Rogel Dorn turns up at the very end and hopes that the Emperor's still alive. Spoilers, I think you're a bit too late, Rogel Dorn. So yeah, that seems a lot less dramatic than the version that we've got now, but does that take away from that lore? I don't think
it was Alan Partridge reading out the plot to James Bond.
He was, yeah, he was. I mean, the Star Child, this is an interesting bit of lore from Rogue Trader. As the spirit of the Emperor drifted through the warp, it gradually dissolved into the flow of energy, returning to the cosmic force of nature. A core of the Emperor's humanity survived, like a small child bobbing on the tide of a colossal storm in a tiny, tiny reed boat. I can't not hear this in like an Alan Partridge kind of narration now. Yeah, the soul of the Emperor is merely a potential, a child awaiting birth, the Star Child. Only a few select individuals learn this secret over the millennia. This is a brotherhood known as the Illuminati. The Illuminati await now the birth of the Star Child and the coming of the new man.
Mm.
Whenever a champion of Khorne, Nurgle, or any of the other Chaos Powers join the patron power, a champion known as the Sensei join the Illuminati. I have never heard this lore before.
Yeah, no. I've heard of that one before. There's different types of Inquisitor as well that believe in various sort of... like there's a brand of Inquisition that think they have to let the Emperor die so that he can be reborn. I think that's related to the Star Child. There's a bunch of Inquisitors saying that no, the Emperor can definitely not die. And then it's also but I've read lore, and that's a really good way to sort of demonstrate that there has been lots of lore and contradicting lore at times as well through the years.
Obviously, this segment's been a little bit tongue-in-cheek with what's happened, but it's kind of like just shows that how much does change without ridiculing the storyline, without kind of meaning that you would have put your army in the bin. That's, I mean, maybe the squats, but that's never really the case when lore changes, is it? And for the squats, it's similar to what we talked about last time with armies getting discontinued. They do try to accommodate that lore-wise as well. And unfortunately, for whatever reason, sometimes things don't work out. But on the whole, I think lore changes are good for the game. And if the lore just stagnated, I mean, we look at Age of Sigmar. I think that's had one of the best developing stories in all Games Workshop stuff recently, because they've had the freedom to do whatever they want. And I'm hoping that we're seeing more lore changes to 40k. I'd love to see something like seismically big happening, like maybe the Emperor does die and they can do a whole new edition with this Star Child kind of arc and go into uncharted territory. I personally think that'd be good for the game. Develop the story. We don't need to be at 1 minute to midnight for the next 20 years.
Imagine the Space Marines not being able to warp travel because the Emperor's kicked the bucket.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. What do you guys think? Like, is lore development good, or would we rather just be playing the same lore from Rogue Trader and Realm of Chaos?
I think the lore development is good. I mean, I'd love to see the Emperor either, dare I say it, get killed off or kind of come back into the lore. Something where he's not sat on the Golden Throne. And you don't want the same characters to be stagnated. You want them to develop. I mean, where would 40k be if Abaddon hadn't destroyed Cadia, you know? So...
Yeah, and you know what? I think we've seen baby steps with it in 40k. That stuff is developing. It is moving. I think it has been moving like glacially slow between editions, and I'm hoping in 10th edition we see some bigger jumps in lore.
I was going to say, you say baby steps, Matt. I think they've made great strides, especially since like the Gathering Storm, the move from 8th to 9th. I think they've really made much more of an effort in driving the lore forward.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like in what's happened, the Gathering Storm, we had the... the traitor forces breaking through the Cicatrix Maledictum, and 9th edition really ended with the same happening. So two editions with the same kind of thing. Where if you look at what's happened lore-wise in two editions of Age of Sigmar, all sorts of crazy stuff's happened, hasn't it? You know, you've got the skies being darkened by Bellacor and the Stormcast losing their soul, the Necroquake, the impending Vermin Doom, or whatever it's going to be called. There's lots more happening in AOS because they don't have to be too, like, faithful to the lore, and I'd rather see them get out of the comfort zone a little bit with 40k. And I think what we've seen in the Custodi book is the first steps towards that, saying, like, look, you don't have to be blinded by the past. Let's go a new way.
Well, I mean, I think the first edition of the Adeptus Custodes book for Warhammer 40k did that, when, because, I mean, up until that point, the Custodians never left the Emperor's side.
No.
You know? And then now, all of a sudden, they're abroad in the galaxy, and they've always been abroad in the galaxy. There's that, the Solar Watch, and that other, some emissaries, I can't think what they were there, that used to go, you know, and deal with threats at the source. You know, if there was ever a chance that someone could, or something could, threaten the Emperor on the throne, be him on the other side of the galaxy, they would go out to that other side of the galaxy. That was all sort of, as far as I understood, created in order to justify an Adeptus Custodes army fighting on the battlefields around, you know, the galaxy.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the same with a lot of the little Inquisition-y bits that we've seen in the last edition as well, Dave. Solar Navy, whatever they are, with their boarding axes from the spaceship game. What are they called?
Boarding axes from the spaceship
game. The breaching party, the Solar Navy.
The Imperial Navy.
That's the chaps, yeah.
Yeah.
The Imperial Navy. They were just really a footnote, and now you can take them as, like, armies in the game. Same with the RBTs, you know. It wouldn't surprise me if, when the Inquisition book comes out, which, you know, it's coming, isn't it? We've all seen it leaked. There's rule, you know, lore justifications to allow you to assemble those as armies, and that'd be cool. It lets you do different things.
Mm.
And then there is the lore that they make a complete, you know, where the Inari, come on, do something cool with the Inari. Don't tease us. And
that
then
really, that still frustrates me today. You know, the Inari makes this big appearance. We think they're going to get, like, their own branch out detachment, their own army. And they've just been forgotten about. Was that somebody's great idea, and then just decided to go, nah, we won't run with that.
I mean, anymore. They brought Gilliman back, didn't they? It was the forgotten the name now, but it was the Inari that brought
it was the Inari, yeah, was, the Vrain, yeah. Or whatever, yeah. Name was, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And I think something else Game Touch would do as well is bring things in to set up threads that they could explore later. Remember Silver Tower? We had the Spider Fang Scuttlers, which were the mutated goblins with multiple legs. That could have easily been the aesthetic for Gloomspite Gits in Age of Sigmar, and they've obviously decided to go down a different path and really lent more into the squiggy side of things.
Yeah.
The same with your, we mentioned her last time, Jay, I forget what she's called, the Shadow Elf.
Yeah.
So, you know, they do lots of this. I mean, we mentioned about the Beasts of Chaos last time, David. I think you said, oh, there's not been much lore development. But if you remember, in the, I forget what it was called now, the supplement book set in Gur. And there's,
yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
And there's a story in there about the shaman who's being kind of visited by the spirit of an old beastman, and it's that Morgur, was he, the old beastman character, and it's kind of set up a plot for that they could explore later, but obviously they never have. So it would be interesting to go through books and just look at any of those dangling threads that are there, just so they can pull them later in the future. And that must be quite fun as the writers to be able to go, okay, well, here's half a dozen ideas. Realistically, we can probably only do one of these, but at least we're giving ourselves wiggle room.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's an interesting topic. I've not read, I mean, I got into Warhammer, compared to you, Matt, much later, really. So I didn't know, I'd never read Rogue Trader or any of those books. So they sound like they were quite the tome.
They were it was a different time. It was a very different time. Before we move on to the next section, I'll leave you with pleasant thoughts about possibly the most powerful entity in Warhammer 40,000 that needs a model. And if we're being cheated if we don't get a like event only model for this. This is the feared Rippy Fish.
Rippy Fish.
The Rippy Fish, yeah. The Rippy Fish is a piranha-like creature with piranha-like habits. It comes from the Lost Hope Death World. It's not large. It's 30 centimetres long. I'm not being funny. A 30 centimetre long piranha seems quite long to me. Its uncompromisingly carnivorous appetite and fearless deposition makes it deadly. Rippy Fish form shoals of several hundred creatures. Movement 4, apparently. However, they can only move in stretches of water.
I don't understand it. They come from this world. Why have they... Just leave them there.
Yeah. Who's the one attack just each? Strength 3. I don't understand.
I know how we can survive the Rippy Fish. We just don't go to their lakes. Stay away from
that.
Don't go in the water.
Yeah.
They've got a cool value of 10. I don't know what cool does.
Cool value. That must be like leadership. Cool.
Yeah. I know there's leadership as well. They're also leadership. Oh, right. 10. Yeah. And willpower 10 as well.
How awesome they are.
Maybe it's how many sunglasses they're wearing. We're going out of universe here. There's like Games Master notes. Rippy Fish could be used as a defensive hazard, maybe in a defensive moat or on a small island. So the next Crusade game that we play, Dave, you need to include some Rippy Fish.
Let's include some Rippy Fish. Because
the law says that we have to.
Don't go into the lakes. The whole planet.
It's the
only way to be sure.
Just in case. Excellent. Well, thank you for that, Matt. That was a great look at some of the old lore and how it's changed in the current edition. So yeah, I'm sure there's lots more you could have quoted from those books. And I think you can still pick them up at Warhammer World if anybody is interested.
Yeah, I believe all three of them. So it's like I've read for Warhammer World now, but that was from the Rogue Trader reprints and Realm of Chaos Volume 1 and 2, The Lost and the Damned and Slaves to Darkness, which are very, very old books from the 80s with some of the like original 40k lore in them.
There you go. Right, we have one of our favourite sections up next. It is this week's top three, and it's coming up, well, next. And so we move swiftly on to this week's top three. And for this week's top three, we're going to be looking at our top three favourite models we'd like to see return as part of Games Workshop's made-to-order sort of mechanic. And they're doing this quite a lot with old models. A new codex comes out, for example, and they'll do a made-to-order so you can pick up a load of old kits. Short time only, and then they're gone forever. Or until at least the next made-to-order. Who shall I pick on first? Let's pick on Matt first. Matt, what three models would you like to see come back in the made-to-order way?
My dream made-to-order models. Number three, I'm going to go for the Wood Elf Dragon, the proper one. The old Wood Elf Dragon before they messed it up and had a second rider and some spikes and stuff on it. I've got a very like nostalgic charm for that dragon. It was just cool and so much better than the flying plastic high-off one that followed it. I'm hoping.
I don't even acknowledge the existence of that. What are you talking about, Matt?
You prefer the sisters, don't you?
No, I'm not. What about the plastic flying?
Oh, the plastic ones.
They don't even exist in my recollection of what.
Do you know what? I want to collect a high elves army just so I can have an army of these flipping dragons.
Yeah, I don't know what you guys are talking about. I love that high elf dragon.
Thanks, Andy.
I'm joking.
I'm not.
Well, Andy, if you want a decent dragon, you want to get the classic Wood Elf dragon. It was just
with a really high back chair.
Yeah, it just oozed being a dragon. If I was a dragon, I would look like that. I'm not sure where that was going, but yeah, number three choice is the classic Wood Elf dragon. And on a similar theme, my number two choice, and this might surprise people who listen to the show because I'm not a current Wood Elf player, but my very first army for Warhammer Fantasy was Wood Elves. And one of the first models that I bought was the classic Wood Elf Tree Man. Now, I'm not talking the metal one that came out before. Well, even before Dirthu. This is the really chunky one, sculpted by Trish, I think, did it. She's done a lot of the classic monsters and stuff. And it... I remember the box art, the nails were painted red because everything was back then because reasons. And I don't know, it's a very nostalgic model for me. And I'd really, really like to see that return. So
I think if they were ever to redo that model, do you know, like in like we've seen with like Mephisto, it would look like the Blood Bowl Treeman.
Yeah. I think the Blood Bowl Treeman is pretty much what that is, a reinvention of it. So yeah, I would very much like to see that Treeman return. However, my number one choice, and this was really hard because there's lots of cool models I'd like to see on a made-to-order basis, but it's something that I always wanted and I missed out on and then never had the opportunity to buy. And that is the real capture for these made-to-orders. And that is the Empire Landship.
From
Forge World. It wouldn't surprise me if that came back as a funky unit for the Arcane Journal. Mm-hmm. I've seen the Bone Grinder Giant come back.
See, when I think of that, I just think of the new Cities of Sigmar range.
Yeah. I'd love to see them. You know, the steam tank go to the old world, and that's no longer a thing in AOS, and instead have wacky stuff like that for the Cities of Sigmar.
Yeah.
Caradrons would help them with that.
Yeah. But Landship's cooler than the Caradrons. So yeah, that's my top three. Empire Landship, please. I will be a very good boy, and I'll put it on my Christmas list.
Excellent. Andy, what's your top three?
So my top three starts off with one of my favourite models, which, again, I think they did it as a made-to-order a couple of years ago, and I very mistakenly didn't buy it, and that's Grecius Goldtooth for the Ogres.
I mean,
it epitomized everything that an ogre aspired to be. You know, he had his throne of Noblars, he had all the gold, and he had a giant chicken drumstick in one hand, and a club in the other, and a crown. And yeah, it was such a nice looking model. And I always looked at it and thought, it's not got very good rules back in the day, and I never picked it up, but I really wish that I had picked it up because it was just such a nice model. So that's my third choice. My second choice is another one I think they did as a made-to-order a couple of years ago, and again, there's a theme here. I didn't pick it up. And that's the Heroes of Helm's Deep box.
That was a great box.
It's such a good box. I mean, when I got back into the hobby, 21 to 22 years ago now, that's frightening to think about. I got into Middle Earth, and I got into it just as the Two Towers box game was coming out. I remember picking up that box and painting up Theoden and Aragorn and Haldir, and absolutely loved it. And yeah, I should have picked it up when they re-released it on made to order a couple of years ago, but I never did. But it was such an iconic part of the Lord of the Rings films. I really wish that I'd bought that box to try and recreate that on the tabletop. So that's my second choice. And then my first choice, there you go, is a model for an army that I'm building and collecting at the minute, and that's the Tomb Kings. And the model that I really wish Games Workshop would bring back, even if it's just on made to order, is the High Queen Kalida. With a serpent staff and her mask. And yeah, I mean, she was such a cool model. I mean, you know, you could obviously use her as High Queen Kalida, but
you know, realistically, by today's standards, you could use her as a Tomb King, or you could use her as a level 4 High Priest. You know, you've got some play with that model now. And yeah, I really wish that I'd picked that model up when it was in production. So yeah, please bring it back, Games Workshop. Pretty please.
I hope they're listening. Just for you, Andy, I hope they're listening. Jay, your top three.
My top three. So I'm going to sort of follow Matt's lead there. I'm going to go for the High Elf Dragon, which was Prince Imric.
Oh, yeah.
The Prince of Kalador on I think if you call his dragon was either called Mithrandir, like I'm pretty sure it's Mithrandir or something like that, like Gandalf.
Yeah, I think it was. A lot of the names were kind of just borrowed from nerds.
I'll need
stuff,
to Google it.
I think that is like 90% the same dragon as the one I picked as well.
It is, yeah. The sort of the main dragon itself. I think it had a different head. It might have had a different tail. So there were some metal bits that you could add to it. And of course, Imric himself with his spear and his horn was metal. And I remember it used to have a really cool rule where other dragons wouldn't fight him.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then when he died, his dragon went a bit nuts. So he would be my number three choice. My number two choice, staying in the old world, Forgrim Grudgebearer. So this was a chunk of metal, and then I think it went fine cast and then it disappeared. He's like the High King of the Dwarfs at the end of the old world. Really, really nice model. A bit like Greece's Goldtooth, actually. He's been carried on the shoulders of four dwarfs, a big golden throne. You've got
Book
of Grudges in front of him. Mm. He's got some really, really cool detail on his armour. Really, really liked sort of Forgrim model himself. So he'd be my number two choice. I do think they have it in the cabinet at Warhammer World, actually, still. I think they put it on a round base when Age of Sigmar came out. That's be cool to see him back on a square base. My number one choice, though, is a bit of a twofer. And it is Tyrion and Teclis. The twins of the High Elves. There's a bunch of models. I also would love to see Elfarion the Blind come out again. Dave, just saying, Dave.
You've got him, Jay. I've given him to you.
You did give him to me, didn't you? He's here behind
me. I did.
Yeah, he is. Sorry, Dave.
The whole story arc of despair and joy there.
So, yeah, they're my top four.
Nice. Well, I'm going to start my top three where Jay finished his top three with Elfarion the Blind. So I used to have this model, guys. You know that. and I gave it to Jay. And I'm like, actually, if they did that model again, I would 100% pick it up because he's in such a cool pose, like proper ninja style pose, isn't he? With like leaning backwards of his sword pointing downwards. You don't really see that. We do see a lot of kind of very similar poses nowadays. We don't see anything like that. So he was my third choice. Keeping it fantasy, a model I keep looking on eBay for is Isabella von Karstein. She's such a classic vampire model, but I can't seem to find her for any cheaper than £100, which is a little bit out of my price range for a single vampire. But she just accentuates like Victorian kind of vampire ideals.
Like, single vampire sounds like some kind of like specialist dating site.
Doesn't it? I'm very quickly getting through my top three. My top choice is Jay had a twofer. Mine's a multiple filler. I've just written the previous White Dwarfs. Keeping it on theme with obviously what we're talking about in the news, there's been some really good White Dwarf minis. It'd be great for the anniversary to be able to re-pick up some of those classic ones. I know I used to have one on foot that was a more of a, like a traditional style kind of White Dwarf, similar to as he is now, where he was going into combat with his two-headed axe. But then, of course, he had the sort of slightly more like out there ones. Like there was a film director one, there was an aviator one. There's been all sorts of different White Dwarfs. It'd be great to see some of those come back on the made to order service to mark the anniversary of the White Dwarf magazine. But the new model's amazing, so that's fine. I'm happy with that. That brings us to the end of our top threes. We do have one final segment left where we find out what the community have chosen and wrap up this week's episode. So we'll be right back. And so we move on to the final segment of this week's episode. It is time to check out the community top three choices. I'm going to start us off over on Facebook with Stephen Johnson. He has gone for Azhag the Slaughterer, in brackets, newest sculpt for sure. Yeah, he's an awesome model, isn't he? I'm surprised he's not. Is he coming back?
I believe he is, yeah.
David Anderson has gone for his third choice, Tyrion and Teclis from 6th edition. His second choice is that Tomb Queen that Andy mentioned. Is it Kalida? I can't pronounce words. And his top choice has also been mentioned, Imric on Mifandrin, that dragon. Ian Webb has gone for a very, very straightforward top three. In third place, the Castaeus assault ram.
That's the hammerhead kind of assault ram thing.
Yeah. And cool. His second choice and top choice are the same thing. The, however it's pronounced, assault ram. Matt, what do we have over on X?
So over on Twitter, Jewelite Jess says any of the 90s wood elves, and she's taken pictures of like the classic Glade Guard and the Glade Riders. And I had a big like 5th edition wood elf army and I sold it a while ago and I really regret it because they look gorgeous. Bitsbox says Ariel, Orion and Azdrubal Vect. Big Geordie Geek says it'd have to be some of the interesting vehicles from Forge World, like the Thunderer, the Macarus Omega would have to be up there. Claude Savagely says the Aquila Strongpoint because I want massive cannons.
Oh, yeah. Who doesn't want? Those boards, I forgot about them.
The Forge World crashed Valkyrie scenery piece and the Ramillus class Starfort for the Battlefleet Gothic. Yeah. So Anonymous Rex says the old Warhammer building set, I hope, and I suspect we'll get a made to order range of scenery for Old World. It's got to happen, hasn't it? Lair of the Astromancer and the Chaos Dreadhold Hellfort. Would really love to see some nice fantasy terrain. Dan says, shamelessly just picking the Dogs of War models I don't have in my collection. Pirazzo's Lost Legion, Baraganza the Besieger, and Ricker's Republican Guard. JF Luina says, Nestra and Arahan, which is the sisters on the dragon, which is not quite as nice as the original dragon. Houghton says the Void Shield Generator, the Fortress of Redemption and the Aquila Strongpoint. Drip Dingus says, the dream is that to get full real rules, but I'd like to see the Imperial Halflings. Ooh. I would too. Marauder Ogres would be great as Badlands Ogres. And Elector Count Marius Leetdorf. It's a cool model, yeah. Cass says the best of the best and has pictures of two of the High Elf heroes and Orion. They had some really nice Wood Elf kind of special characters, didn't they? All the wizards and the lords and stuff. They're just so good. D. Porter says Grom the Paunch with the chariot. I would very much like to see that. Ruglud's Armoured Orcs and Bron Zigo's Galloper. The Coward says the Scorvane Mance, Metal Gores and Metal Ungores. Yeah, I'd love to see some of the original Metal Beastmen stuff when they come out. Tommy Butter says, does the entire Battlefleet Gothic range count? Absolutely. Andreas Berman says the Giants of Albion, but really anything from the Dogs of War. Chaos Dwarfs, the monsters particularly, the Lamassu and the Taurus, and Orion. And Engra says Long Drong, the Median Guard and 4th edition Thunderers. Yeah, some really nice picks there.
Yeah, really good. Really good picks. I forgot about those Forge World tiles. Should have included those on mine. And I think my brain just instinctively went off to the Old World when there's so much like Forge World stuff I could have chosen. But never mind. And I nearly also said the Sacrosanct Chamber, but I thought that was a bit too soon. And the reason I didn't choose the High Elf Dragon is because I am certain that's coming back into the range proper, so I can buy them to my heart's content.
Unfortunately, I think you're going to be right. And that is
do you know, I increasingly am tempted to do a High Elf army increasingly tempted to hire for me, just so I can paint one of those, just so I can play it against you guys. That I just feel like I need to do that. That has to be a thing. But we'll see. We'll see. To ask the question, what is next week's top three?
Well, next week's top three is one that Andy came up with. And I think we're going to have some fun with this one. We want to know your top three Warhammer band names.
Excellent. Andy, I should have gone to you and had you say that rather than Matt. In fact, let's do that. Let's do that again. We'll probably keep it in the cut. But Andy, what's next week's top three?
Well, Dave, I'm glad you asked. Next week is a very musical week. We want to know your top three Warhammer band names.
Excellent stuff. So you can get your choices in early via our social media channels. We will be putting and also your Facebook posts and stuff to ask for your top threes just before the recording of the next episode. So feel free to comment on those. And so that brings this podcast to a close. Guys, it's been great as always talking hobby with you. And we'll be back again in a couple of weeks' time. Until then, have a great time hobbying. Bye.
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 Thanks for listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast. For more content, remember to check out spruesandbrews.com. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, send us a tweet at spruesandbrews or head over to facebook.com/spruesandbrews.